Hi, if I could just have your attention for 1 second. If you're here for Sirkan's lecture, why don't we just move up a little bit since we, if you don't mind. So my name is Brett Littman. I'm the executive director of the Drawing Center, and just some housekeeping issues. If you have a phone, if you don't mind, if you could just turn the ringer off now, that would be terrific. I'm very pleased that we're able to host today in conjunction with also the opening week of the Leon Golub exhibition, Live and Die Like a Lion, a presentation by Sirkan Özkaya, which also is somewhat in conjunction with an exhibition that opens for him next week on Thursday at Slag Gallery, which is at 531 West 25th Street, and the show title is called Today Could Be a Day of Historical Importance. The lecture title is also Today Could Be a Day of Historical Importance, but there's a subtitle, I'm Retiring from Everything But Drawing. So today we're going to find out why Sirkan is retiring from everything but drawing. I first came into contact with Sirkan's work when I was the deputy director at PS1, and he was included in an exhibition that our junior staff had done up on the third floor. And I've been following it ever since, and we had spent some time when I was in Istanbul for the biennial chatting about some projects that he was doing, and I had said immediately, when you're next time you're in New York, let's do something at the Drawing Center. So without further ado, Sirkan's going to kind of DJ his multiple screen presentation here, and I hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Thanks, Brett. Thank you for coming. I'm going to, as usual, start with this project. And well, in 1996, I wrote a letter to Louvre Museum in Paris, and I proposed them to display Mona Lisa upside down. And I got a letter back, like in 1 week, from the director whom I had addressed my proposal, Monsieur Pierre Rosenberg. And I was really excited that he could have said, yes, sure, why don't we do it? Or, you know, maybe even better that they actually did it after my proposal. But, you know, the letter was more more formal and didn't really say anything. It was only like, thank you. Well, that's, let me see. And then 1 year later, I wrote another letter to MoMA, actually, and I told them that I would like to cover the Mondrian's Broadway Boogie Woogie with a sheet of acetate and spray paint a dollar sign on it. By this, I was sort of inspired by Alexander Brenner's action at the Stedelijk Museum in Amsterdam when he did an actual dollar sign on the actual painting of Malevich, and he had to go to jail for that. But you know, my aim was less harmful, actually. But then I got this answer from the then curator of painting at the MoMA, Mr. Kirk Wynedo. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago, and he says, quote, I am obliged to tell you that I cannot muster any sympathy for your request. Alexander Brenner's actions were criminal and abhorrent to anyone with respect for works of art. I am not willing to do anything to promote or encourage any attempt to honor or in any way bring favorable attention to Brenner's vandalism. So, unquote. So his answer was more engaging, but it was a very clear no. And then, more recently, I wrote another proposal to the United Nations here in New York, and I told them that I have this idea of the universal happy hour, and you know, in a time like 1 hour or 1.5 hours around the world, where all the alcoholic beverages will be 1/10 of their price, and my letter started with quote, "In these times of hardship, when many individuals all over the world are striving to survive, we believe that there exists an essential need for a boost of moral high. We strongly hold on to the idea that the organization of a universal happy hour could indeed serve as a golden opportunity," etc., etc. And then I got a very kind of humorous answer from them, but again, I didn't get the financial support. In the meanwhile, I was I started doing works of art. I started actually sort of making works of art from the pictures I'd seen in art history books or magazines or anywhere else. And this, and you know, the works which I really liked, and which I wished probably that I should have done myself. So this is one of them. After Keith Arnott, of course. Keith Arnott is an artist. That was his work in 1974, and then mine was in 1997, I think. And I wrapped this car after Christo. It was called Wrapped Automobile, inspired by Christo. And I also, in a little different manner, I did a replica of Michelangelo's David, but this time it was more Dr. Mark Levoy at Stanford University invented this device called three-dimensional fax machine, and it operates as such. It scans the object, say it scans this bottle from every angle, and it creates this three-dimensional computer model. And then you send the model over to somewhere, say in China, and then if they have the three-dimensional printer, they can print this out. So he, in fact, had scanned Michelangelo's David, and I asked him to send me his file, and he did that. So, but then, I'd never seen David myself, so I thought, since it's just a computer file, we can maybe blow it up, and I did so, and I made it twice as large as the Michelangelo's David, and then and I painted it gold as well. And during the installation, this copy of David, we wanted to show this for the Istanbul Biennial, but then it got during the installation it collapsed and was broken into pieces. And then we, the story goes that the mayor of this other town in Turkey, Eskişehir, he considers himself somewhat an artist. He called me and he said, why don't you bring it over and we can restore it and, do it here, erect it here in Eskişehir. And so that's what we did, and right now it's ready to be put in its pedestal, and he says it's going to be in June, but right, So another work is another maybe, direction could be this one. It's called What an Art Gallery Should Really Look Like, or The Large Glass, and this is a collection of slides. I mean, slides when we used to, have slides instead of the digital images. That was the main, agent for the artwork. So I collected about 100,000 slides from different people, artists, galleries, museums, etc. And then I displayed them on the storefronts of some galleries. This is the version in Utrecht in Holland, and you could see it from the inside during the day. And we let the lights on for the night, and you could see them all from the street at night. And then I, went on copying, or say tracing, or making drawings in some sense. But what you're seeing there is from another project I'm just going to show. But these are this is a friend of mine gave me a book. I really liked it. It was by a Turkish writer called Ahmet Karcılar, and it's called The Picture Stories. And I started tracing it. I rewrote the whole novel, which was about 200 pages, in about, I think, 6 months or so. And you know, it became a drawing. And then I, in an art gallery, I replicated these drawings and made them into a book. And at the gallery, you could just have the book, which includes the drawing and the story, of course, for free. And next door, there was the bookstore, which sold the book for about, I don't know, like $10 at that time. So, and then this project evolved into another more immediate kind of drawing project, per se. And this is, what you're seeing is a copy of the Radikal newspaper, which I worked together for this project in, that was in 2003. And what I did was, you know, in collaboration with them, they designed their front page and the last page of the paper, and they gave it them to me. You know, they did it a little faster than normal. They gave them to me with some help. I did everything. You know, I traced everything on the page, and then they scanned these drawings and then used them as their newsprint for the next day. So the newspaper's front pages appeared as a drawing for 1 day only. And that's this is another version we did with the New York Times, but that wasn't the cover of the actual paper. That was the cover of the Weekend Arts section, and we also put it, you know, into another level with duplicating the drawing into the drawing into the drawing ad infinitum. And another project I'm just going to show very fast is that it's called Bring Me the Head Off. And it's something I did with different restaurants in the world. And this one is from Shanghai with M on the Bund. And the project is I created these molds for a sculpture. And it's the sculpture is supposedly this little head of a bear on top of a plate. But then I didn't want to create it from bronze or that kind of material or terracotta. I just made the molds, and I wanted to work with the restaurants so that they would actually decide what the material for the sculpture would be. And in this case, it was a dessert, and then you, in order to see it, you have to go to the restaurant, order it from the menu. They bring it, they make it, they bring it to you, and then you pay for it, and you interact with it, so to speak. You eat it, and it becomes something like this in the end. A kind of more recent project I'm doing is this one. It's called A Sudden Gust of Wind. It's actually... I'll just tell you what the technique is, and you can actually see here what the installation is like. We attach strings, like very thin nylon strings, from the ceiling to the floor, and then one row, another row, another row. So I make a grid of these strings, and then they somehow enable me to, you know, draw in the space. You know, like you can always think about the space, but on most of the time on two-dimensional medium. But here you can actually, you know, do some things in the space, which isn't just an animation, but the real thing. So with the, so I did this work with lots of paper, like blown in the wind, and it looks like frozen in time and space, and in the end it looks like this kind of. And then I made a mass-produced version of it, which is called The Breeze, and it's just one sheet of paper and, you know, packaged and sold in stores. That was the Turkish version. We are going to do the US version this year pretty soon, and this is and it's actually a metal sheet of, you know, metal sheet that's painted to represent the paper. So and I think this you know, the Mona Lisa upside down, that was the sort of first encounter of mine with the art history and what's been in the what's in the museums, you know, but art as an idea, and then its reflection in our world is the artworks and the museums and, you know, institutions. So that was sort of my illumination in a sense when I discovered that, you know, to be on the side of the art lover could be more privileged than to be an artist. So then I started to call myself an art lover instead of an artist, because and you know, you suddenly realize that all the museums are working for you. You know, they store the artwork for you for the next generation. Nobody owns the artwork actually, but you. So, and I felt free to, you know, just propose the institutions what to, you know, what my idea about the paintings was. And for instance, this is you know, this is a method that painters always do. Like when you're working on a painting for a long time, you start not really, you know, you cannot really see what's really going on in the painting. So you just put it upside down, or like put it in front of a mirror so that you can see what's crooked and what's not. And that's a method. And, you know, with these masterpieces of, say, High Renaissance, be it High Renaissance or modern, it's we accept them. We do not have the way to judge them. You know, it's we have to accept them like we accept the mountains or the, you know, the sun that comes up every morning. So these are like masterpieces, and we don't have the right to evaluate or judge them, but we just base our criteria, you know, of aesthetics on them. So that was a way for me just to, you know, if we can do it with the original, just turn it upside down for a few days and then right side up again, we will maybe be able to judge it actually. And with the Broadway Boogie Woogie, this, you know, when I saw Alexander Brenner's dollar sign, the action he made at the Flash Art magazine, I couldn't help myself but to show it to my mom, you know, who was, you know, the closest person I had that moment. And, you know, she's not really interested in arts or anything. But, you know, it was this story, this narrative of this one person going to the museum, doing this dollar sign on an actual picture, that really was kind of touching to me. And I just wanted to share it with someone. And then I came with to this idea of an action with the Mondrian, another version of that same idea probably. And you know, over the years, I as you can see there, what is this? Okay, as you can see, the mostly the inspirations are from the art world, etc. But over the years, I discovered other parts of the world, like, you know, or in life, like alcohol. So, and I was thinking that it could be something that could, you know, create the illusion that would bring people together, as if, you know, we are you know, in a living in a brotherhood or something like that. So that's a way of you know, feeling in contact with the other people all over the world. And if the, you know, if the booze is so cheap, like 1/10 of the normal price, everyone would drink. You know, the policeman drinks, and we drink, and the rich people drink too, because, you know, they can have their you know, $10,000 wine for only $1,000. So it applies to everybody, quote unquote. But then it's when you're dealing with the institutions like the museum, or the, you know, say United Nations, or the art as an institution, it's always I always prefer to be as impotent and as single as possible. It's if you're sort of competing with the institution, there's no way you can actually win. Or in fact, if you start competing with the institution, you can only become another institution. So instead of that, I always prefer to stay on the side of the individual, and, you know, then you may have a chance of at least showing people that there's an opportunity in that, like making everything upside down. But it doesn't mean to make everything upside down. It's just the It's just the vision you're showing. With these works, actually, it's the, again, like, sort of, this is probably the beginning of the tracing for me, like, you know, what I've seen in the books, but not in real, I just wanted to create for myself, you know, and I adored these works. And as an art lover, I think I had the right to love certain kinds of works, and, you know, that was one of them. So I made it so that I could see it in person and in space. So that's one of the reasons why I kept, you know, repeating or tracing these works of art. With David, it became somehow another sort of narrative because, you know, I really like, quote-unquote, losing control over the work and, you know, that it becomes something else. But here it just, you know, kind of went a little too far and, you know, it just started to create its own narrative, which is fine. And with the, you know, with the machine I just described you, like the three-dimensional fax machine, the idea is, you know, like I was talking about this bottle, that you can actually make a model of this and then send the data over to somewhere and then you can have the object, but you cannot really open it or you cannot really drink the water in the object that you just printed out in China because it's the form of the object. But there's only one thing in the world that doesn't lose any quality in that process. That's the sculpture. You know, the sculpture is the object as an object. That's the form is the function. You know, we adore Michelangelo's creation because of the form and nothing else. So it's so there's only one thing that you can fax three-dimensionally in that sense is the sculpture, and so that's without any loss of the essence. So then I thought that would be the appropriate way to multiply it. And I remember actually when they I think it was they included the little dot drawings of Damien Hirst in a spaceship from England going to space to Mars or something, and there was a big discussion like should this be the, you know, heritage we are leaving to the outer space, to the aliens, and, you know, if the world goes down, you know, Damien Hirst, is that the appropriate thing? But then it crashed, and the dot paintings were just lost in the space, I guess. So this is Again, with this other installation, I showed the slides. They were the, you know, the representation of a certain artwork. And, you know, in the I don't know, like 20 years ago, 10 years, 15, 20 years ago, we only had the slides. And, you know, all the galleries wanted your slides. And slide was the, you know, the ultimate representation of your artwork. So that's... And, you know, like when you do an installation or, you know, something like this, the image is the only thing that remains. So that's why I wanted to collect all these agents, you know, from the artworks. And I call this the largest group show on Earth and with, you know, hundreds of thousands of artworks and available 24/7, like inside and outside. But, you know, the only thing was if you're, and, you know, like when you're on the street, you're on the side of the life. When you're in the gallery, you're on the side of the art. And in the gallery, you can see the slides from the, you know, with the sunlight coming through, and you can see them without the glass, but you must be in the gallery. And you have the title and the caption and everything. You know it's an artwork. But when you're outside at night, you don't have to be in the gallery. But you're in the life part, but there's a glass between you and the work, and you see it through the artificial light, and you don't have the caption. You have no idea what it is, or, you know, if you're well informed, you know it's an art piece, but it's just a facade full of light. So with this tracing, it's You know, every time I make and show these works, like the tracings and the drawings of these, actually the ones you've seen on the other screen were the ones we are going to show at the Slag Gallery next week. So you can, if you want to see the original copies, please come by. And with these, and especially with the newspaper works, the questions I faced most are how, you know, like the labor, about labor, you know, like how is it possible to, I mean, how could you do this? You know, it's such a big work, people think, you know, like labor-wise. But it's only like 1 hour or a couple hours, you know. I could do this in 5-6 hours by myself. And, you know, when you're 5-6 people, it takes only 1 hour. And I know people, painters work on their paintings for years. And it's never like that in that. But here, you're actually witnessing the every single movement of the tip of the pen. So that's, I think, what makes the labor more apparent. And also the value of this. You know, like you're adding some kind of a value on top of this because it becomes a drawing and the limited edition at the same time. But it's still a very cheap copy of the newspaper, which is another aspect of, say, this work, Bring Me the Head Off, because it's a sculpture. You can look at it, you can even eat it, you can destroy it, but you cannot really keep it. And you pay, I don't know, $10, depending on the restaurant, you pay some modest amount of money for the sculpture. And it's reproducible. And the thing here is that this sculpture, I mean, I only, when I said I only created the molds, I just created the possibility of this sculpture. I never made the actual objects. The restaurants made the actual objects, and actually the patrons, the guests, you know, the people who went to the restaurants ordered and let the restaurants make them. So there's an equal relationship in demand and supply. So this sculpture has been so many times reproduced as the audience, per se. And there's an equality in that. I mean, if there's only one person who wanted to eat this or see this, there's one sculpture. If there are 100 people, then there's 100 sculptures. And with this work, with this work, the main idea was to create, you know, a big installation in which, you know, everything is new and everything is, you know, made for the fullest effect, but this all should cost less than $10. You know, and I only used paper, strings, you know, the strings a friend of mine gave me, and paper and glue. So that was one of the main ideas behind this, but also the time element. You know, you can look at this work as a full, you know, room with paper blown and frozen in time. But you can also look at it as one single sheet of paper, the journey of just one single sheet of paper, frozen in time and space. So then you may start seeing it as a, you know, like a more like a tracing, like the journey of one single sheet of paper, instead of a whole room with a lot of sheets of paper. So it's kind of trying to, you know, have the time and space frozen. And of course with this one, the single sheet version of this, the idea is that you know, the object is always about the negative space in the room. Like, you know, the Jean-Paul Sartre's approach on Giacometti, he's talking about, you know, Giacometti's thin figures, that Sartre says Giacometti isn't forming the clay, but he's forming the room, actually, because he's not coming from the side of the clay, but he's coming from the side of the room, so he's just, you know, forming the whole room. So he's creating this, you know, he's playing with this negative space, and with the paper is something like that. It's, you know, the white sheet of paper is somewhat abstract, you know, it's a rectangle, and you know, once you just tilt the edge of it, it becomes an object, and it can incorporate the whole space outside of it. So that's the idea about the breeze. Again, you could, you know, this is the box, and with the cheesy ad on it, the photograph, and it's the idea is that this you could buy for, I don't know, $20 at the store, but and if the museum wants to buy it, they can go to the store and buy it for $20 as well. For the institution. Yeah, in 1996, I wrote a letter to the Louvre Museum in Paris and proposed them to display Mona Lisa upside down for a few days. Thank you.